I'm Gail Hunt, and I'm excited to bring you Fun Time with Cliff Goodwin, a rock and talk series of Cliff's Tales from the Road, a behind-the-scenes look at his rock and roll adventures right here at WCUW.
So what was your collaboration with John Butcher Access like?
I met John in around 1979, 80. You know, back then, you know, the whole thing is it's such a long time ago, and to actually say it was March 4th on, you know, even Ringo doesn't know what he had for breakfast on March 4th, but some of the biographers do.
Yes.
But in any event, yeah, our manager from American Standard was also managing John at the time. And they wanted to put a band together. They asked me if I'd, you know, play guitar with John, which I thought, I love him. You know, I loved him then and still love him now. The band was John, myself, a guy named Derek Blevins on drums, and Chris Martin on bass. God, we had so much fun, made so much money. It was unbelievable. We actually made, at some gigs, we made as much as $6. No, it was horrible. I mean, it was a box of Ritz and a can of Alpo. Remember one time we were with them, it was like we were going to play The Rat at Kenmore Square, and we were going to get two-thirds of the door. And we went and played. The place was packed, literally packed to the rafters, and I walked out of there with $13. And I said to myself, I'm still with Joe Cocker. I'm with Joe Cocker at the time, but I'd play with John when we were off the road. It was incredibly musically rewarding. John was explosive and fantastic. But at one point, he said to me, I was getting ready to go on the road, and of course they wouldn't play when I'd leave for a month. And John said, Cliff, you know, we got to continue. We got to play while you're gone, because we had to survive. And, you know, I will see you when you get back. I said, hey, I understand it totally. You know, I was off making money touring the world and then coming back and playing my dreams on the local rock and roll level with a guy like John Butcher Access. Oh, real quick, funny story. Remember Wolfie, you know, Wolfie Giannandis, who plays bass with pretty much every project I'm playing with now. He's also a great luthier, a guitar repair man. This guy came into the store. He said, I heard this band the other night in Lowell. It was this Greek guy. The band was unbelievable. And Wolfie said, the Greek guy? And the guy went, yeah, John Butcherakis.
That is a Greek guy.
John Butcherakis. Anyway, so John said to me, going back to the rest of the story, we got to keep playing because we can't stop when you go on the road with Joe Cocker. I said, okay, fine. So I went out on tour, came back, and we're getting together, and he said, well, I got good news and bad news. I said, well, let's hear it. He goes, well, the bad news is we're going to continue as a trio. We're having a lot of fun as a trio, and we really don't want to have the fourth piece. And I said, I understand, Tony. I said, what's the good news? He said, while you were gone, we got signed. We got signed to Polydor Records. So it was a win-win all around. I had a great time with John. We still do play together every now and then. When my schedule permits, he includes me on John Butcher Access reunions. We have an absolute ball, without a doubt. It was thrilling, but we had a lot of fun. And John was just great to play with. And Chris and Derek. Derek Blevins, powerhouse drummer. Powerhouse.
And I guess, who are some of the other famous or musical collaborations that you really enjoyed?
Well, not so much musical collaborations as much as meeting people who were your heroes. Because you got to remember that when I first heard Joe Cocker, it's 1968, I am a sophomore at Daugherty High School, wondering what just hit me. Little did I know that in 8 years I'd be playing with the guy. So these people were heroes of ours. I remember meeting Steve Winwood. It was incredibly awkward. It was at a little get-together at Chris Blackwell's apartment. I was with Joe. New York City, B.J. Wilson, who played on the first Joe Cocker album, Little Help from My Friends. He played on that track. He played with us in Joe Cocker's band for years, B.J. Wilson. He also played in a band that you might have heard of called Procol Harum.
Wow. Yeah.
An incredible, incredible band. B.J. Wilson introduced me to Steve, and I was so tongue-tied thinking later, there are a zillion and a half things I could have asked him about the Spencer Davis Group, about Traffic, about Blind Faith, about Keep Going. And all I could say was that I looked down at the floor, and there was a really nice pattern on the living room floor, and I looked and I said, "That's a really nice floor, isn't it?" What an idiot.
Did he like the floor?
He said, well, and again, these are charming. I found that the English guys, no matter how gigantic they were really down to earth and had a lot of humility. When you ran into trouble, is even trying to get close to an American rock star. Not that I cared about it, but even if I hear stories to this day that you can't get insulated and isolated and all the rest of stuff. But Steve Winwood just agreed with me. He said, "Yes, Cliff, that's a smashing flaw." And I was like Chris Farley on that Saturday Night Live skit, you know, where he was interviewing McCartney, and he's just messing it up, you know. It was like that. It was wacky. Yeah. Started really hitting the road heavily in Europe, again, 80, 81. We did a gig, a festival up in Norway with U2. And this is, U2 wasn't U2 yet. They were just U2. And they were down on the bill. It was not an arena. It was like a stadium, a small stadium up in Norway. And everybody was in the same dressing room, you know, which to me made all the sense in the world. But in any event, Bono comes up to Joe, and I'm sitting there, and he's looking at Joe, and cocky, you know, because U2 originally, they were kind of punky. Mm. They were up like a punk band. And Bono says to Joe, "Don't you get tired of singing You Are So Beautiful and Feeling All Right and every night?" And Joe looks him square in the eye and said, "You should be so lucky to have a hit." Because keep in mind, U2 were down the bill, they, you know, but you could tell there was something there. We went out and saw him. You could tell there was something there. Anyway, here we go. Fast forward 3 years later. We're doing these, every summer we would do these incredible package tours of stadiums in Europe. Joe, who was right up there with popularity with U2, with Tina, with Foreigner, with Huey Lewis. Well, one time we're doing one of those shows, and I went and scoped out the dressing room area for Bono and Edge. They were always separated pretty much. Bono and Edge were in one dressing room, and Larry and Adam were in another. They kind of separated because they were different personalities. So I found Bono. I said, "Listen, do you remember doing this festival up in Norway years ago with Joe? I know it was in Norway." He goes, "Well, kind of." I said, "Do you remember the conversation you had with him about a hit?" And he kind of got a little bashful, and he went, "Yeah, I guess I do." And I said, "How do you feel about In the Name of Love now?" You know, because they can't not play it without going, you know. And he started cracking up, you know, because it's funny how the perspective, it's all perspective, turns. You know, you're young, you're a punk guy, you're full of piss and vinegar, but now it's Saint Bono. You know, and I mean, and I don't know if anybody out listening has ever seen U2. If you get a chance, do it. Really, truly, a great, great, great band.
I heard a rumor maybe you had lunch with somebody named Bob.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. Sue Ann could probably tell you that story better than me. Bob Dylan. He used to like to come to the rehearsals when we were rehearsing in New York City, and he'd just show up and kind of sit in the corner. A really interesting, very observing cat. You can imagine how observing he is. After the rehearsal, we were downtown, and we had to score a cab to come uptown. So, you know, I'm asking him, you know, "So what have you been doing?" He goes, "Nothing. It's a drought right now. Nobody's writing any stuff." He goes, "Even the Stones are using old tracks." You know, it was around the time of Undercover of the Night. You know, when you're talking to him, he sees all. That's what struck me about him. He sees all. But in any event, we're going uptown, and we were staying at this rock and roll hotel uptown called the Gorham, which was, in its heyday, was not unlike the Chelsea. You know, I mean, it was definitely a rock and roll hotel. You could get away with a lot of stuff there, and they didn't care. But just down the street from the Gorham was this lunch counter type small restaurant, dark wood, kind of like in Worcester. It wasn't unlike Circe's was years ago on Franklin Street. Any of you elderly people out there might remember. It was dark wood, dark leather, you know, dark naga hide seats and whatnot. It's me and my wife Sue Ann and Joe and Bob Dylan. I said, "You guys want anything to drink?" "Oh yeah, sure." So I went up to the bar, and I'm ordering from the bartender. He looks at me, he goes, company's kind of thick in the corner, don't you think? Because he knew, he saw what who was in the corner, Joe and Bob Dylan, right? And I said, yeah, please don't tell anybody. Even back then, you didn't want to call your local press agent up and come down, and they didn't want to get badgered. Kind of funny, but he was a very interesting and, like I said, observant guy. You just let him speak. You know, it wasn't a rock star thing as much as almost like being in the company of a philosopher.
Come, senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't lock up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changing.
I'd like to thank Cliff Goodwin for this fun time episode. We look forward to hearing more next week. Tune in to The Drive at 5 and for our Rock and Talk series around 6 p.m.